Welcome to the latest United We Stand podcast. My name's Andy Mitten and I'm delighted to join our guest today. It's William Morgan, who is a famous former Manchester United player. 69 now, Willie, still lives in Manchester. He was born in Sockey, close to Alloa in Scotland. And he was a famous winger for Manchester United between 1968 and 1975. But before that, he played for Burnley. He had 8 years at Turf Moor. And he went back to Burnley after Manchester United. He also played at Bolton Wanderers, played on loan at the Chicago Sting and the Minnesota Kicks. And he also had a spell at Blackpool. He got capped 21 times by Scotland. And he was a cult hero at Old Trafford, where fans had a song for him about Willie Morgan being on the wing. The full lyrics were, "When Willie comes onto the field dressed in red and white, all the fans lift up their hands and shout with all their might. Forget your bells and Francis Lees, can you hear them calling? Hey, hey, cleared away, here comes Willie Morgan. Willie Morgan on the wing." Welcome, Willie.
Sang that very well, Andy, I'm impressed.
Can you remember the lyrics to that? Could you sing it?
No, I couldn't sing it, but I do remember the lyrics, because the song was actually on record on RCA. It was written by Graham Gouldman of 10cc, and they recorded it under the same name. Yes, I do. I remember the lyrics. Could you still get it on YouTube, which is crazy. But yeah, the fans started it off. They were the ones that started singing, not the whole of the lyrics, but Willie Morgan on the wing, you know, that's which is the chorus. And Graham put several songs to me, asked me to choose which one I like, and I said they recorded it in RCA.
So he was a renowned songwriter. Most football songs aren't very good.
10cc, you know, he still is. And he's a great songwriter. Fantastic. So, very honoured to have a record. It's just called Willie Morgan, the record. So,
what was it like playing at Old Trafford and hearing the Stretford End sing that?
It was fantastic. I mean, the Old Trafford fans, the Manchester United fans, are, along with the Celtic fans, the greatest fans in the world. And it was, you know, it's an incredible buzz to run out, and it was always the first song they sang. That was I was very fortunate to be very popular. So the first song, they say, when the team came out, used to sing that.
You said Celtic. I take it you were a Celtic fan as a kid?
Yes, I was. I still am a Celtic fan as well, obviously.
And who were your childhood heroes? And did you ever go to Parkhead?
Yes, I went once. As a little lad, we didn't have the money to do it too often. And my heroes in those days, that's way back in the 50s, were a guy called Willie Fernie and another guy called Charlie Tully, who was a left winger. And then in the 60s, of course, you know, Paddy Crown was one of my great heroes. And to end up playing with him at Old Trafford was a dream come true for me.
What was Paddy like as a player?
Well, as Bill Shankly said, Paddy was deceiving. He was slower than you think, but he was one of the great passers of the ball. He was brilliant. He could read the game. Great halfback. He's just a super great player.
What was he like as a person?
He's a little bit left of Genghis Khan, I think. But other than that, him and I, in fact, the whole team, were great friends. There was no cliques in those days in the 68 team. And Paddy, he's fantastic. We played a lot of golf together. We had a regular four ball with Samat Busby and a friend of Matt's called Martin Flynn. And they played at Northampton Golf Club at the time. And we had a regular Sunday four ball. And of course, it was fierce. So you can imagine what it was like with Paddy. But I loved it, and it was great times.
You say that Paddy was left of Genghis Khan. A couple of years ago, it was arranged for Paddy to receive a text message from David Cameron. Now, the last thing Paddy would do on this planet would be to vote Conservative.
Yep.
Because he didn't have a clue how mobile phones worked, he didn't realise that David Cameron wasn't really texting him. So he got this text, and he was absolutely livid. So you can imagine the reaction.
Yes.
You know exactly what it's like.
Yes, I do.
You've written your autobiography?
I have, at last.
Why?
Well, I've had many, many offers through the years, and I didn't want to do it. You know, I have a very private life. My wife Kay and I, we live very quietly. I play my golf at Muir Golf Club most days, or if not every day. I play off 8, and then along came Simon Wadsworth, asked me to do a piece for a book that he was writing, and of course he asked me the same question that most of them did: why haven't you written a book? So I said, I don't want to, and obviously now who's going to be interested? Anyway, he came back a couple of weeks later and said, got these publishers, they all want to do it. I said, okay. So we sat down, and it's taken a couple of years. We just sat down with the tape and brought back a lot of memories. And if it hadn't been for Simon, I wouldn't have done it, in all honesty. So that's the reason.
At 15 years old, you had a choice between Britain's biggest and best football clubs. Arsenal wanted you.
Yeah.
Manchester United 2.
Yeah.
Leeds and Chelsea had sent scouts to your home, Mining Village.
Yeah.
And it was Celtic.
Yeah.
With whom your father was obsessed.
Yes.
Surely they had an advantage.
A massive advantage. But
you chose Burnley.
Well, I chose Burnley. Burnley, the other teams that came in was Burnley. Oh, there was loads. I mean, up Scotland, Partick Thistle. And also Blackpool and Newcastle. So what we're going to do, and they said, you know, Dad said, well, what do you do? He said, well, I can come down for a couple of weeks and have a look, and if he likes it, you know, and then we'll sign him. So and he said, we'll pay him while he's there. So he said, you pay him? So I said, yeah. So I said, what do you pay him? So well, we'll pay him £8 a week. And my dad worked 60 hours in the pit face for £3.10 a week. He couldn't believe. So the plan was to go around all the clubs, pick up £16. Okay, it was going to take a while, and then go back and sign for Celtic. That was the plan. Burnley, I'd never heard of them. And the scout came and he brought a newspaper and said, they're the best team in England. They're the top of the
champions of England.
The top of the first division in England. I said, oh, okay. Anyway, decided to go there first and then go around, come back, and then go back to Scotland. And when I went to Burnley, I chipped a bone in my toe while I was there. I was in plaster for 6 weeks, and they were just very kind. And then when I told my dad that I was going to sign for them, he was heartbroken. But, you know, I don't regret it. They were a great team, played with great players there, and you know, the rest is history. You know, I've had several chances to go. I had 3 chances to go to Celtic. Jock Steen tried to sign me a couple of times when I was 18, and when I went to Manchester United at 21, he tried to get me to go back again. But, you know, I loved England, and once my dad realised that I wasn't going to get murdered in England by the English people, he thought that was his biggest worry, that somebody would murder me when I was sleeping. You have to understand, we had no television or telephones or cars. There was nothing, just a little mining village.
What did you think of the English?
Well, I had no preconceived ideas, apart from the fact that, you know, I was obviously a bit worried because my dad told me that they might kill me, and realised it was just very nice people, as he did, obviously, when he came down. And I just love it here. That's why I'm still here.
But you didn't stay at Burnley?
I didn't stay. No, obviously, when in 1968 I had a big problem with Bob Lord.
Bob Lord, the infamous former chairman of Burnley, for whom a stand at Turf Moor is still named after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice.
Autocratic would be his style, if you're being diplomatic.
Dictator would probably be more in line with his style. Bob was a one-man boat.
What was he like?
Do you want me to say it in front of my wife? He was a fat, ignorant pig who had a bloody deaf ear. He used to turn it off when I was slagging him. We had a few run-ins, Bob and I. But in saying that, Harry Potts was a fantastic man, great manager, as was Jimmy Adamson. A lot of nice people there. But he, you know, he ruled. He was a dictator. He ruled. In 1968, when my contract was due for renewal, that's when we fell out. So, hence the...
You had a difference of opinion.
Yeah, we had a big difference of opinion.
How much were you on at the time, and how much did he offer you? Because you were Burnley's star player.
Yeah, well, the highest paid player, if I remember, was Alex Elder at the time. I think it was on £80 a week or something like that. I was on £20 a week and £20 appearance money. And I asked him at the time, I asked him for, I think it was £80 a week. And you got £4 win bonus in those days, £2 for a draw. And they said no. And it was different in those days, because if you asked for a transfer, you didn't get anything. If they transferred, you got 10%. But if you asked, you got nothing. So he asked me to put my transfer and write transfer request, and I said no. And it's a long story, but he banned me from the ground, and we were at loggerheads for all that summer. So I had no training. I hadn't been training all since the end of the previous season.
So you trained alone?
No, they didn't let me train. They didn't let me go down. I played golf. Just played golf. No, they wouldn't let me hit the ground. I was banned from it.
So, were rival clubs alerted to the fact that...
Of course.
You were for sale, or you weren't happy?
No, it became, obviously, I had to get someone else to put it in the newspaper, because I couldn't do it. No, people became aware, and... At the time, all the clubs started coming in. They would call me, Harry would call me to go over and see, you know, I've got Arsenal, I've got Chelsea, I've got all the people. And then, I mean, this is in the group, I don't remember what time it was, but then Don Revie contacted me from Leeds and said that, you know, Burnley are asking 100,000 for you. And I said, we're going to offer them 70,000, but we'll give you 15,000. Now, £15,000 would make me a millionaire in 1968, believe me. So I said, oh, okay. He said, all you have to do is just refuse, just say you don't want to speak to anyone. And so he said, have they told you that we've contacted them? I said, no, they haven't. Because Bob Lord and Manny Cousins, the chairman, and Bob, they had massive followers about. Bob wasn't very... I went over to see Harry and I said, has anyone else been in Celtic? And I actually went back to speak to Celtic, and it was... And then I said, has anyone else made an offer? No. I said, are you sure? So Harry said, well, you know, it's not for me to say. I'd have to ask Mr. Lord. So he still didn't tell me Leeds had made an offer. And of course, whereas I was tempted to go back to Scotland to play for Celtic.
So Steen came in for you?
Yeah, he came back in. And then I was hanging on, you know, just waiting till they had to tell me that Leeds had made an offer and accepted an offer. And then I said, play golf. They still wouldn't let me near the ground or train. And this went into, October now? So no pre-season training or anything. And while I was waiting on this happening, I was playing golf on my own. And it was evening. It had just gone slightly dark. It was at Baker Golf Club. I lived in Baker. And I saw this guy in a long trench coat and a fedora on, walking up towards the 18th green. It's only a nine hole course, and I was playing the 18th, which was just a short hole. So I had a wedge in my hand. So I seen him walking up, and I thought somebody was coming to get me. So I picked my clothes up, went down, I've got the wedge in my hand, and I said, "Don't come any closer, babe. What do you want?" And he said, "Oh, I'm from Manchester United. My name's Jeff Mitten." Yeah. I said, "Right, and what do you want?" He said, "Well, could I have a chat to you?" I said, "Well, yeah, I'll follow you down," but I still wasn't sure. I thought it was a hit, man. So he came back to the little flat that I stayed in and said, "Mr. Busby would like you to come down. Is there any chance you could come down tonight?" That was a Friday night. I said, "Yeah, okay, come in." So I followed him down in my car and went to Old Trafford, and it was now, 8 o'clock-ish, something like that. And Jimmy Murphy met me, and Jimmy took me outside into the director's box and said, "Have a look at this, son." I said, "Yeah, it's fantastic." He said, "See all those flags? Which one do you have?" I said, "Oh, I see the titular." He said, "You'll do me. Come in." He said, "Matt's waiting on you." So I went in and met Matt.
What was your first impression of Matt?
I thought it was like my dad. Mr. Busby, obviously we called him Mr. Busby. He just said, "I've admired you for a long time. I think you're the greatest winger that I've seen, and I would love you to come and join us." So I said, "Yeah." So
United had just been crowned European champions.
I know.
So going to Burnley in 1960 with them being First Division champions was a big pull. Going to the European champions.
Being a champions wasn't a pull.
Okay.
If I hadn't broken my toe, tipped my bone toe, I wouldn't have been at Burnley.
Okay.
I'd have gone back to Celtic.
Yeah.
I'd have done the rounds.
Because they treated you well.
They were just very nice people.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how nice they were. And they were giving me £8 every week, which was like amazing.
Yeah.
So but to go with then Matt said, "You know, is there anything that you'd..." He said, "We've agreed, I've spoken to Mr. Lord, and we've agreed a fee of 117,000 okay.
So £117,000 made you the record transfer fee in Britain at the time.
Apparently so, yeah. So he said, "Is there anything you want to ask me?" I said, "Well, you know, I like the number 7 shirt." So he said, "Yeah, that's okay, no problem. We'll move George to number 11. Anything else?" I said, "No, not really." So my mind's racing, because it was difficult. He was such an imposing figure without... He was just like sitting in front of your dad, or the priest. And so I thought, how can I ask him how much he's going to give me? So he said, "You sure you got no other questions?" He said, "Would you like to come here?" I said, "Well, yeah, you know." He said, "Well, okay." He said, "Well, you go home and come back tomorrow, and we'll have all the contracts prepared."
So you'd not agreed your wages?
I had no idea what he was going to pay me. So I signed for Man United, and I hadn't a clue. And even when I went back the following morning, they were playing Chelsea that afternoon, and I went back, went up to his office, a cup of tea, and there's all of the... And he brought in... There were 5 copies in those days you had to sign. So I thought, well, I'll have a look. But he didn't. All he did was just open the piece, said, sign there. So I signed the 5 contracts. And he took them away. And I said, "Well, you're not giving me a contract." He said, "No, no. We have to get it countersigned. You'll get it on Monday."
So you still didn't know how much?
So I spent the whole weekend. So, of course, my first wife, Pat, who sadly died, I went home. So I went home the Friday night. So she said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I'm going to sign for them." She said, "Well, what about Leeds?" I said, "Well, you know, I don't know. I'm going to sign for them." She said, "What are they going to pay?" Because I owed everybody. And I said, well, I don't know, I didn't like asking him. It was a bit awkward. She said, I don't believe you. You must have asked him. You must know what they're going to give you. So I said, no. I said, I'll find out tomorrow. I'm going back tomorrow to sign the contract. I said, don't worry, I'll make a point of getting it. So I went back home, and Matt gave me the option. He said, would you like to stay at the match? I mean, without going through the whole story, he brought up a couple of players. He said, anyone you don't like? I said, yeah, Nobby Stiles, I can't stand him. So he said, oh, you'll love Nobby, he's a great guy. And he was. What a nice thing to meet. So he said, do you like to stay at the match? I said, well, I'm actually playing golf gaffer at 2 o'clock at Baker in a competition. He said, well, good idea, because all the press and that are going to be after you. So he said, you slip away and we'll see you Monday morning. You come to the ground and then we'll get someone to show you how to get to the training ground, because I had no idea where the cliff was. And that's I went to the ground Monday morning. I got a copy of my contract. I was shaking, I was frightened to death to look at it. Because I thought,
and what was the final figure?
What was another 20, another 20 quid a week? The fight, he may be the highest paid player in Britain. It was £185 a week.
And what did you pay?
£20 a point. £20.
So you went from £20 to £185.
Don't forget, in those days, and not really to use it and using the thing, but if you check, like George was on 40 quid a week. Nobby was on 25 quid
a
week.
So why did he pay you so much? Why four times more than the best paid player?
No. The best paid player was Dennis Law. Okay. Dennis was on £140 a week. Because if you remember after that, Dennis went and asked for a £5 a week rise. And he got put in the transfer list. Paddy Crem was on £100 a week. Bobby was on £80 a week. And then the rest was just whatever. Why did he make me that? If you ask Max, I don't know. I wasn't too unhappy. I was over the moon. Just phenomenal money. And £20 a point, other than £2 a point, which all the players were on, by the way. You know, that was the bonus, is £20 a point. So you could pick up, you know, 2 games a week.
A lot of money. I'm rich.
Rich? Phenomenal.
Did you go out and buy anything?
No, I paid off all the debts. Paid the bookie. Paid everybody we owed. We didn't have any money. So it was great. It was fantastic.
You made your debut, mm-hmm. 28th of August 1968 against Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
United had lost the previous game
4-0.
4-0 to Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Tottenham are a good side then?
No, they're a great team. So that's I mean, obviously you never know how you're going to be received. Oh no, well, you never know how you're going to be received. And they had playing for them at that time Cyril Knowles, who was, you know, one of the hard men of the league. Anyway, I destroyed him and we won. And from then on, obviously, fortunately, you know, the fans were fantastic, and that was the start of a great story.
You've not been training properly.
I hadn't trained since the end of the season, I hadn't trained, and I was really unfit. And the training at Manchester United was quite hard, because they did weights. I'd never done a weight in my life, I didn't know what they were. And of course I tried to join in, as you would. And I got really, really bad strains in my muscles and stomach, which I didn't know. I mean, it was just horrendous from doing weights and doing sit-ups. But nevertheless, it still went well. But I did suffer quite badly with the stomach problem.
Describe your style as a player.
Style? Create chances, create goals. I think if they did stats in those days that they have now, assists they call them, I would have more assists than anyone ever played. Every centre forward that played with me scored 15 goals. That's what I did, create chances for people. I scored the odd goal as well, now and again. I scored the odd goal. But I'm happy beat people, staying wide on the wing, go past anyone, up to their problem. Just great chances.
By 1970, you were voted United Player of the Year. Mm-hmm. You've become a bit of a superstar by that time.
Well, I got an agent. I didn't have an agent, obviously, from the previous story. I actually found myself an agent, or he found me, who... Steve Rebell, who got me so many contracts, including the record deal, you know, the all sorts of different deals. And then got me a brand new Daimler Sovereign, which was fantastic.
What sort of contracts did you get?
And then...
What were you doing? What sort of sponsorship were you doing?
All sorts. Clothing, you know, doing columns, doing all sorts of things. And then one day I went up to see him, the door was locked, and one of the contracts I had was a company called Barry Paul, and they were producing Budgie suits. Remember Budgie? Remember Adam Faith? It was a series, I know, before your time, TV series called Budgie. It starred a guy called Adam Faith, who was a singer. And the Budgie suits take off. There's actually a photograph of me modelling them, one of them. And they had the contract to reproduce these things. They were denim suits. And we signed a contract with them all. Steve did, on my behalf, did all the publicity. And then it took off. And it was stood there and probably in about 100,000-150,000, which was phenomenal money. And
how did you handle fame?
Well, it wasn't fame because I couldn't find Steve though, and eventually still couldn't find Steve. And then I went into their place in the same, it was Kennedy Street buildings in Manchester. So Barry Paul had their offices in there. So I went in, and I can't remember if it was Barry or Paul. So one of them, I said, "You haven't seen Steve, have you?" I said, "Oh, how's the thing going?" He said, "Oh, phenomenal. I mean, we've got every manufacturer in the country making these." I said, "Oh, fantastic, you know." So I said, "You haven't seen Steve, have you?" He said, "No." I said, "He's not seen him for a couple of weeks." I said, "Well, I can't get hold of him or anything." So, and we've done a run. I said, "That's great news." He said, "Oh, well," he said, "but the deal's finished." I said, "What are you talking about, the deal's finished?" He said, "Well, Steve came in and said, I'll take 20 grand up front and cancel the contract." I said, "What do you mean?" So he'd gone in, and then he disappeared with all my money, everything. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, I got a knock on my door in Sale, where I lived, and it was Jeff Mitten, the same Jeff Mitten. And he said, "Willie, I don't know how to say this, but he ran a hire purchase company." He said, "I'm going to have to take the car." "What are you talking about?" He said, I don't know what to do. I said, "I'm embarrassed." He said, "But it's not me, you know, I'm just working for this company. And can you take the car? I want the car." He said, no, it's just all in hire purchase. And the guy's not paid any instance. I said, "Well, could you give me a little while?" And I raised the money to pay. I paid the car off in Scotland.
So your agent did a runner with your money?
Did the runner with all the money.
Did you ever find him years later?
Oh, babe, you talking about Jimmy Swords? I had everybody looking for him.
Really?
I had the world looking for him. Never found him.
So you had basically anyone who's anyone in Manchester looking for this
not
guy.
Not just Manchester, no. I knew people in London as well.
No one ever heard from him again?
No one.
Not even anecdotally? He wasn't even spotted in a bar in London or Los Angeles?
No. He just, as the police? Trying to trace him.
Proper
as well.
Lord Lupin.
Just disappeared now. He just disappeared.
With a good chunk of...
No, they took everything. Whatever he had taken in my behalf.
So all of your commercial deals, he went away with that.
Everything.
So
left me with car to pay.
Right.
It was a great deal. It's in the book, that, anyway. Or my fan club?
You had a fan club?
Yeah.
The first footballer to have an official fan club?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I was a member of the Elvis Presley fan club, so I knew how it worked, and the two girls from Nelson approached me.
Which is near Burnley.
Brunskill sisters, and asked me if they could run a fan club for me. They said that they would like to have an official fan club, and they would run it and do the newsletters and whatever. And yeah, it'd be great. Got a fan club just like Elvis. I was very happy. So, yeah, it was very nice. You know, it was all very innocent, very nice.
You were a teddy boy?
I was a teddy boy, yeah.
Describe the clothes you wore.
Drain pipes, beetle crushes, the long sideburns, and you know, the jackets with the velvet collars. That's how it was. Teddy boy.
Shoes with thick soles.
Yeah, the beetle crushes they were called. Or brothel creepers, they were also called.
So you'd wear that for training?
No, not for training. No. When I came to Manchester.
This is for a night out.
No. When I came to Manchester, the teddy boy era had gone. Teddy boy era. I was wearing bloody bell bottoms in it.
So the
teddy boy era was in the early 60s.
Was when you were at Burnley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it continued even after, but 63. Started, yeah. Anyway, it's since gone now.
So you moved to Sale?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Creran lived in Cheltenham?
Yes, he did.
And you used to pick him up before you'd get the coach to away games?
Not all the time. He asked me to do it once.
And what happened?
Which was a great honour. And the coach was leaving, I don't know. 9:30 or something, 10:00, the coach was leaving. And Paddy said, oh, can you pick me up on your way from Sale? Obviously, I passed Cheltenham. So I said, yeah, you know, great. So I arrived at his house at, if the coach was leaving at 9:30, I arrived at his house at 10:15. Because it was only from his house to the ground was like 5 minutes. When I arrived there, it was silence. Curtains were still drawn. So I knock on the door, nothing. I knock on the door again. So I thought, they must have gone. So I get back, just getting back in the car, and the window opened upstairs. Paddy, still in his pyjamas. So he said, won't be a minute, don't. I said, Pat, it's now like 9:20. He goes, no, wait a minute. Hang on. I don't have a lift. So I went back in, and at Burnley, you were never late. They were very strict, but you're just never late. We were never, ever late. So he came downstairs, opened the door. He said, come in. I said, well, he's still got his pyjamas on, by the way. He said, do you want some breakfast? I said, what do you want? No, we have to go. We've got to be there, they're leaving. He said, oh, I'll be a minute, I have to have something to eat. So he went and put the kettle on and said, have you heard the latest Rebel song? I've got the latest album, you know, the Rebel songs on. I said, no, I've got to go, I can't. You know, we're going to be late. He said, I'll be all right. And he went, have a cup of tea. And put the kettle on, went up to get changed, came back down, had a cup of tea. Anyway, when we arrived there, they were all on the coach. The coach was parked outside, you know, top of the ground. And
so the whole team were waiting, apart from you and Paddy?
The whole team were waiting. So I drive up in the Jag. Drive up, park the Jag, and I lock it up. So I get on, I run over, I go up the steps, and Samat was sat at the front with Louis Edwards. And I said, Gaffer, I'm sorry, late. Okay, lad, on you go. And I went up to the back of the bus as we did, because we played cards. Then Paddy came on and said, oh, good morning, Gaffer. Mr. Chairman, nice to see you. Okay, let's go. So when we got to, we were actually stopping at Stone, near Stoke. We used to go and have lunch. I can't remember who we were playing. So when we got to the hotel, we're all in there. Gaffer gave me a shout, so Willie, have I won you something? So he said, now don't be picking Patrick up again. So I said, no I won't. He said, that's a good laugh, go and enjoy it, fine, no problem. And I never did, so learned my lesson,
but I still loved him.
You weren't to know it, but you joined a team who'd waned from being European Cup winners to being in the second division within 6 years. You were as close to the decline as anybody.
Yeah.
Did you join the right club at the wrong time?
No, I joined the right club at the wrong team. Yeah. I should have gone to Leeds. Leeds were a great team, but I shouldn't have. I say I should have gone to Leeds. I have no regret. I didn't, by the way. But for a career point of view, and yet in saying that, my time at Old Trafford, even though we struggled, I had a great time and the fans were great, and to this day the fans are just fantastic.
Why did it unravel so quickly?
Well, when Matt retired, which was a shock to everyone, we had no idea that he was going to retire the year after. And there was quite a few players at the end, ended in the careers, Bill Fouts, Shea Brennan, and one or two others. And Dennis had been injured quite a lot, he'd spent a lot of time with injuries. And then when Matt retired and Wilf came along. Now, Wilf Simon's pal, so I'm going to be kind in front of him. Wilf came along and the idea was right, because it was one of the to appoint within the club. Liverpool carried it on and was successful. But unfortunately, the idea was right, but the man was wrong. Wilf was infantile. He was a 5-year-old girl. And he made it happen even quicker, because he fell out with all the established players. He was a child. The child in a man's job. And that was the big start of the decline.
It mustn't have been easy for him going from being a player to being their manager.
But the players, apart from...
And didn't you recommend him for the job?
No, I didn't recommend him for the job. That was Doherty. I recommended Doherty, not Wilf. No, I didn't. No Wilf. I mean, he was a... But the players had no resentment about getting the job. They all wanted it to work. All the players wanted to work. But then he said the things he did were so childish. And just, apart from doing all the Scots lad, I hate Scotsmen anyway. Yeah, that would make you popular. And then what he did to Bobby, wasn't very nice. He made him do the press-ups in the mud, which I'm sure you've got on record. So. And
when you saw Bobby being asked to do press-ups in the mud?
If it had been me, Wilf would be in hospital now, and he wouldn't be now, if it had been anyone else. Bobby was a gentleman, but that was the end of Wilf. That was the end of Wilf. And he did it in such a way, he just wanted to degrade him. That's what he tried to, because Bobby had already been dressed. He'd finished training early, as he did on a Friday. Because Friday used to be, he'd just come and did a little warm-up and then have a bath, and then... And Bobby used to come in earlier, because he used to go into Manchester for a meeting. And he had his suit on, jacket and tie. And Wilf decided to call a meeting in the middle of the pitch at the training ground. And it was pouring down. And he sent Crompton in to bring Bobby out before he left. He told Bobby to come back out, we're going to have a meeting, which never happened. And it was so cold, and he said it was raining. So Bobby came out, and of course he said, "Can we do it under the stand?" And Wilf said, "No, we do it in the middle of the pitch. We do what I say." So we all went in the middle of the pitch and made Bobby walk to the middle of the pitch in the mud. And then Bobby put his hands in his pockets, as he would, because it was cold and raining. And one of the stupid rules that they used to have, if you get caught with your hands in your pockets at training, you have to do 10 press-ups. So he said, "Bobby, hands to pockets, do 10 press-ups." And he did. Bobby did them. But that was the end of Wilf, because he got sacked shortly after that.
Subsequent managers came.
Yeah.
One of them was Tommy Docherty.
Mm-hmm.
You were later to have a highly publicised falling out with him. There was legal action. I don't want to go into that because we get into all sorts of problematic areas. Initially, you had a good relationship with him. Didn't you recommend him for the job?
I did. I didn't. No. So Matt, I played golf with Matt on the Thursday at Mere, as we did. And he said to me, and we never used to discuss football. We played golf, and he said, I've just come back from Brazil. I've been to Scotland with Tommy. And he was fantastic. He was absolutely fantastic. I liked him. I liked what he did. I liked his blend of players. You know, he was a great manager in that side. And Matt said, what do you think of Doherty? And I said, well, he was... because he hadn't a very good reputation. And I said, he was great. He was absolutely fantastic. Do you think he would do a job here? I said, I think he'd be great. I said, OK. That was a Thursday. And then I went home, and Thursday night, later on, the gaffer rang me and said, you don't have his phone number, do you? And I said, yes, I do. He lives in Largs. He lived in Largs at the time. So I gave him Tommy's phone number, and he got the job on the Saturday. And initially, you know, it was like a breath of fresh air. He was probably... the rest is history. You know,
he initially described you as the best winger in the world.
He was right.
Brazil manager.
The Brazil manager said that as well. He was the greatest. You see, I was the greatest winger he'd ever seen. After we played Brazil in 1972 in the Maracanã, can't think of his name. The famous Brazilian manager.
What was it like when United went down?
It was heartbreaking. There was just nothing. No matter what we did, you know, it's very true that when you're down there, everything goes against you. Bad bounce, late goal, everything goes against you. And no matter what you do, and no matter how well you play, it just, you know, decisions, all sorts of things. And when we went down, I mean, the great myth is that Dennis sent us down with that bio. And he didn't. We were already down. That was a myth. But Dennis thought he had at the time. But he didn't. It was heartbreaking.
So the second division season, great team.
But the second division season,
we didn't play as much because you had injuries and Steve Cobb would come in.
No. I went to the World Cup with Scotland in Germany. And when I came back from that, I was playing tennis and I got hit with a tennis ball and had detached retinas in both my eyes. So I obviously had a emergency operation and it took a long time to recover. And then, but I started the season. And then, I don't know, halfway through the season, the stories that led up to it was that I already had found out bits and pieces about Doc. Initially, I didn't believe any of them. And the first one being Dennis, when he placed Dennis on the transfer list without Dennis knowing. And I didn't believe at the time. And then Paddy. And then the problem came with me. He'd made me captain. And he did that. He called me in one day and said, at the Cliff after training, he said, look, I've just come from a director's meeting at Old Trafford, and they would like you to take over as club captain. I said, well, what's wrong with George Graham was captain at the time. He said, well, he's relinquished the captaincy because he's struggling, he's not in the team, he's struggling and he feels that the pressure's too much, and if he's not captain he may be able to capture his form. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll have a go. Unlikely candidate, but I'll have a go. And anyway, as it turned out, George hadn't spoken to him at all. And without going through all that story, then the next one was Jim McAuliffe. Jim's a great friend of mine, still a great friend. And he'd fallen out with Jim. And the club owed Jim money. He was getting paid in instalments for his transfer. And Jim got into a little bit of a financial problem regarding the houses, not. And he asked if he could have the next instalment paid a little bit earlier to help him. And got refused. So Jim said, you have a word with him? So I said, yeah. So I went in and said, you know, give him the break. You know, what's the difference it made? It didn't make any difference. And then he started, oh, I'm going to get rid of him. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. This is Doc to me now. And I said, oh, well. So I went and said, Jim, he's not going to do it. And he's got it in for you. So just watch your back. You know, he's going to try and do it and get rid of you. I said, but don't tell him. Because he'll know I've told you. Anyway, Jim went in and had a big barney with him. And then he obviously started on me, which I didn't know. It started with pulling me off one match. That was the start of it. It was just a series of, I mean, we're here for a couple of weeks to tell you everything that he did.
We've got 4 minutes left, so okay. I need to...
Well, that was the start of it, but he did me without me knowing. I didn't know what he was doing. And again, it's in the book, the story, because he'd been going to, not that I knew, to the directors and said that I'd been asking for transfers, and I had. And at the end of the season, he called me and he said, look, I want to be friends. Let's put bygones be bygones. I want to be your friend. You know, you're a big star, and I need you. And, he said, we're going on a tour to Far East and somewhere. And he said, I think that you should just have a rest because it's been a long, hard season. Just take the family away. I'll see when you come back. He said, but let's be friends. Okay. And I went off. Following that night in Manchester News, the headline, Morgan refuses to go on tour. And then the next thing I know, I've been placed on the transfer list. He'd gone into the director and said, look, he's insisting he's never going to play for us again. I'm left with no option.
Your version of events was very, very different.
No, I didn't have any events. Yeah. I never spoke to him.
You went to Burnley for 30,000.
I went back to Burnley.
Yeah. Way under what you were worth.
Of course.
What was your second spell like at
But Burnley? The reason I went back to Burnley is that I didn't have to move house. I wouldn't leave my house in Manchester. Kids were at school. And the only other option was Man City.
Man City?
Yeah, City wanted, you know, I could have gone to City. Or I could have gone to Leeds again.
Why did you not go to City?
That's the Manchester United man, you know. City tried to sign me before I went to United. When I went to United, Peter Swales, they tried to sign me. They came back in, but I didn't want to do that. And Burnley, Jimmy Adamson came back and said, oh, Bob wants to make up. He wants to be. Okay. And we're going to sign Mike Summerby as well. So we've got two wingers. And I said, well, that's okay, that sounds all right. Don't have to move house, I just travel over. And then Jimmy, I got injured. I had a bad injury when I was out for, a couple of months. Really bad tear. And then Jimmy got the sack. And I signed a 6-year contract with him when I went back. Is it finished?
No, it's fine.
Jimmy got the sack after about 9 months. And then Bob called me and said, I never liked you, I said, well, you owe me money. And it ended up with, obviously, not very nice.
So you went to Bolton, you played in a team featuring...
I came back, Jim...
Sam Allardyce, Peter Reid, Frank Worthington, Tony...
No, Frank wasn't there then. Frank came after. Ian Greaves, the manager, who I also rate as a great manager... He came and Bolton were at the top of the second, or near the top of the second division, and looked like they're getting promotion. And Ian came, took me for dinner and said, you know, we'd love you to come here. So we discussed it and he said, okay, you know, and I said, obviously I'm not going to move. He said, no, you just travel over. And we got promotion and I had 4 great years there. I loved example, he was a great manager. He had a great team. He had a great brand. He played great football. Yeah, Sam Allardyce, Paul Jones, Tony Dunn, John Ritson, Peter Reid, as you said, Neil Watmore up front, great goal scorer, and Peter Thompson, the old Liverpool left winger on the left wing, who was also a great player. And it was fabulous. I loved it.
You have an unlikely record of being the longest serving player never to have won a trophy at United. You played 300 matches in, nearly 300 matches in 7 years, played in a load of semi-finals,
yeah.
And were a Terrors hero.
Yeah.
How do you look back at your time at United all these years later?
I loved it. But even with the bad bits, I loved it. Manchester United is Manchester United, and even to this day, you know, the care day when we go away, we sat in the oddest of places in Las Vegas or Tenerife or Portugal, and the fans come up asking
people still
for recognize
you. Yeah.
How they recognise me with grey hair, I don't know.
Same style.
But they do, same style, yeah. But they do, and I have no regrets whatsoever. I love Manchester United. The supporters, I love the supporters. They're just fantastic. And to have played for Sir Matt Busby is an honour. That says everything.
And what was it like when those fans were singing your name from
there? It was fantastic, you know, because obviously I was the first name they sang, which they used to sing it in order of the preference, and I was the first name they sang every match, which is, you know, if you don't feel good with that, then you don't feel good about anything. They were great, and I loved them.
What are you doing now?
Making the wife tea in the morning. A bit of a butler's job at the moment. And I play golf at Muir Golf Club place. So I spend a lot of time at Muir playing golf. And just with the family and, you know, Kay and I, we've got a little place in Tenerife. We go over quite a bit there. Oh, the Howard Keel, yes. I've not mentioned the Howard. I've ran the Howard Keel golf competition for 27 years.
Tell some of the listeners who Howard Keel is.
Howard Keel was in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. He was a big Hollywood star. And then he became Clayton Farlow in Dallas. He was a lovely, lovely guy. And we started doing, it was for the NSPCC 27 years ago. And that's what turned me grey, organising the golf competition. So, but it's had a great run, and had so many people. Jack Lemmon came, and obviously Johnny Mathis. John, of course, we, as you probably know, was Kay and I's best man. We asked him not to sing.
What happened?
I'm only kidding. No, actually, I've had a great life. I've been very, very fortunate. See, I have no regrets. God, I've been digging coal. Or giving communion out. The other choice was a priest. I was going to be a miner. So, no regrets.
So that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to everybody who bought the new United We Stand, which came out this week and featured the interview with Ed Woodward. Loads of you supported it and bought the mag. And we need that, because if we're going to spend hundreds of hours providing original material in each new issue and going to visit people and speaking to people face to face and spending time doing that, we need people to buy the mag. And thankfully, loads of you did. Loads of you outside the ground, and loads of you downloaded it as well and ordered a digital subscription. So welcome to all the new subscribers. I hope you enjoy the mag and think that it's good value for money. And if you do, we'll keep working hard and keep trying to bring you a really good mag. We're going to record the next podcast in a week's time in the Basque country around Manchester United's game there. I'm going to go and see Ander Herrera in Bilbao on Monday, and then I'm going to travel across to San Sebastian. It's a beautiful city on the Bay of Biscay in northern Spain, close to the French border with Biarritz, and there's going to be a couple of thousand Reds there. So we'll record the podcast from there, and we'll bring it to you next week. Until then, goodbye.